Well, Happy New Year, everybody. Out of curiosity, how many of you actually stayed up past midnight? Wow, you're better than me. I think I kicked off about 10:30 on that one. This being the beginning of a new calendar year, we thought it would be a fun idea to have our sermon series look at the very beginning. So we are going to spend this month looking at the book of Genesis. A couple of warnings right up front. Warning number one. There is no way we would be able to give attention to every detail in the book of Genesis in 1 month. It would take about a year to do that well. So, by the time we finish this series, I guarantee there will be some of you who go, wait a second, you didn't cover my favorite part. You didn't address that one question that I had from the book of Genesis. I'm sorry. For instance, we're not going to give a whole lot of time during this series on chapter 1, the creation of everything. But we did ask 7 artists in our congregation. We gave them each a window, and we gave them one of the days of creation and let them use their creativity to create an image for that part of the creation account. And so that's behind me. But we're not going to talk a lot about chapter 1. We're going to give our attention to a couple of different areas, so I guarantee some of you will be disappointed that your favorite moment in Genesis won't be a topic of conversation. Warning number 2. This morning's sermon is not going to be your typical sermon. In fact, it's going to feel more like a classroom lecture, because this morning we are going to give an overview of the entire book of Genesis. We're going to be using a couple different formats for doing that. One, hopefully you have your bulletin. There's a whole lot of fill in the blank this morning. But we're also going to be using 2 short videos produced by the Bible Project. If you've never heard of the Bible Project, it's a nonprofit organization that receives donations so that they have the money to produce videos that are overviews of books of the Bible and major themes in the Bible. And once they're able to produce them, they put it online for free for anyone to use. So you can go on YouTube, and it's for free for anyone. I was introduced to the Bible Project. A friend said, Mike, you have to look at this. It's a video overview of the book of Leviticus. My thought was, I think I got to mow my lawn. Maybe I can hammer a golf tee into my ear. Really, a video of Leviticus? But then I watched it, and it was fantastic. It was so well done. And saying that about a video of Leviticus is really saying something. And so we're going to be using, they divided up Genesis into 2 parts, and we're going to be using their videos this morning. One's about 5 minutes long, one's about 4 minutes long, so we'll have a little bit of video. We'll kind of unpack that first video, watch the second video, and kind of wrap things up. So that's what we're doing this morning. A little different, don't worry. Starting next Sunday, it'll be more of your traditional sermon, as if you can call my preaching traditional. So I hope you guys are all ready. Class is starting. Hopefully you have a pen or pencil with you, and you're ready to get going. We ready for this? All right, we're going to go ahead and start off with the first video, and then we're going to unpack it a little bit.
The first book in the Bible is a book you've probably heard of. It's called Genesis.
Genesis comes from a Hebrew word. It's pronounced reshit, and it just means beginning.
Now, there's a lot of stories from the book of Genesis, and it's easy just to pull out a specific story and try to tell you what it might mean. But we think the best way to understand this book is to look at the book as a whole and show you how the whole thing is designed.
The book is designed to fall into 2 main parts. You have chapters 1 through 11, which is telling the story of God and the whole world. And then you have the second part, which is about God and Abraham's family, as chapters 12 through 50. And how the 2 of those parts relate, that's where you find the message of the book.
Okay, so let's start back at the beginning. The first part of Genesis begins with a creation story where God creates everything.
And how exactly that happens, of course, that's where all the debates come. But he takes a dark, watery chaos and he turns it into a beautiful garden where humans can flourish.
That sounds nice.
It does sound nice. In fact, 7 different times God says of all that he's made that it's good.
And this is where we meet the first human characters in the Bible, Adam and Eve.
They're both individual characters, but they're also representative. Adam is the Hebrew word for humanity, and Eve is the Hebrew word for life. And God creates them in his image. In other words, humanity reflects or is meant to reflect the creativity, the goodness, and character of the Creator out into the world that he's made. And they're supposed to reproduce and make cultures and neighborhoods and art and gardens and everything else. But he gives them a moral choice about how they're going to go about building this world. And this is what the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is all about.
And he tells them, don't eat of the fruit of this tree or you will die. What's that all about?
So up till now, God has been the one defining and providing what is good. And so God is the one with the knowledge of good and evil. But now this tree represents a choice. Will the humans trust God's definition of good and evil? Or are they going to seize the opportunity and define good and evil for themselves?
And Adam and Eve eat the fruit.
This is the core biblical explanation for that concept of sin, that desire to call the shots myself. It's the inward turn of the human heart to do what's good for me and my tribe, even if it's at the expense of you and your tribe.
And the problem is humans are horrible at defining good and evil without God. And so now that humanity's made this choice, things get really,
really, really bad. So Genesis 3 through 11 is like tracing this downward spiral of all humanity. So Adam and Eve, they can't trust each other anymore. And so there's a little story about how they were naked and felt fine about it beforehand, but now they feel shameful because all of a sudden Adam's definition of good and evil might be different than Eve's, and so they hide from each other.
Then there's another story of temptation. Cain is jealous of his brother Abel, and he gives in and kills him.
There's a story right after Cain about a guy named Lamech, and all we know about Lamech is that he accumulates wives, like property, and he sings songs about how he's a more violent, vengeful person than Cain ever was, and he's proud of it.
Things get so bad with the human race that we see God decide to just wipe us out.
Yeah, we typically think of the flood story is about God being angry, but it actually begins with God's sadness and grief about the state of his world. And so out of his passion to preserve the goodness of his world, he washes it clean with the flood.
But there's a glimmer of hope. He chooses Noah and his whole family, and he saves them on this boat.
Yeah, don't forget about the animals.
Right, and the animals. So Noah and his family are going to reboot all of humanity. I mean, he must be a pretty great guy.
But this is the story most people don't know because it's kind of weird, is that Noah gets off the boat and he plants a vineyard and he gets totally plastered. And then something sketchy happens in his tent with his son. It's a tragic story.
So from here, humanity grows again, but things are as bad as before. And the last story is the famous story of the Tower of Babel.
And in this story, you have all of the nations uniting together to use this new technology they have, the brick. And they want to make a name for themselves and build this big city with a huge tower that will reach up to the gods. But God knows that this city will be a nightmare. And so in his mercy, he scatters them. And all of these stories, they're underlining the same basic idea. When humans seize autonomy from God, when they define good and evil for themselves, it results in a world of tragedy and death.
And this leaves you wondering, is there any hope for humanity?
Yes. Yeah, there is. It's the very next story that answers that question. It's the beginning of God's mission to rescue and restore his world.
Ooh, the first part of the book of Genesis. So if you have your bulletin with you, a little bit of fill-in-the-blank time, because we're going to unpack those first 11 chapters a little bit more. Chapters 1 and 2, God makes a good world for humanity. Now, if you've been around here over the course of this past year, you should know the Hebrew word that we translate as good. And that Hebrew word is tov, T-O-V. So at the very beginning in chapter 1, when it says that God creates and he says that it is good, he is saying it is tov. We usually translate it as good. It can just as easily be translated as beautiful or functional. And so the language is saying that when God created, he looked at what he created and says, this is good. It is beautiful. It is functioning just the way I want it to function. It is tov. So God creates a tov world for humanity. To unpack that a little bit more, God created by bringing order and beauty out of chaos and darkness. God created by bringing order and beauty out of chaos and darkness, and humans are the divine image bearers. Okay, unpack that one just a little bit for us here. God created by bringing order and beauty out of chaos. Interestingly enough, this is not a theme that is only found in Genesis, this idea of God bringing order and beauty to where chaos and darkness was. It's actually a theme that you see run through the entire Bible. And usually when it talks about chaos in the Bible, it's revolving around a story where there's a large body of water. You might think, well, that's just weird. Thing is, in the ancient Near East, it was generally understood that the large bodies of water were a place of chaos. It's a place of fear and uncertainty. And so as you go through the Bible, you see these stories over and over again that revolve around large bodies of water. And they're almost always stories where God is bringing order and beauty to a place where there was chaos and darkness. Look at the very beginning of the story, where God's Spirit hovered over the waters. Noah's Ark, Jonah and the large fish. Jesus walking on water, Jesus calming the storm. You take it all the way to the book of Revelation, and there too you have this imagery of the oceans and the seas. Again, God creating order and beauty where there was chaos and darkness. But part of God's plan for bringing order and beauty in the midst of chaos and darkness was and is you and me, because God created you and me. Have you ever stopped to consider the fact that God created humanity, which includes us, to be part of his plan of bringing order and beauty to a world in chaos and in full of darkness? Now, we're going to talk a whole lot more about this reality next week in the sermon, but let this sit with you for a moment. You are not a mistake. You are not an accident. You are not of little significance. No, God created you as part of his plan for bringing order and beauty to a world of chaos and darkness. He created you in his image. Hebrew word for image is tselem. And it literally is talking about a physical representation that points to some other person or deity. To say that you were created in the image of God is to say that you are the physical representation that points people's attention to the Creator. When God created you in his image, he created you in such a way that you point to the one that restores beauty and order in a world of darkness. That's what he created you to be. You are of tremendous value. You're not an accident. You're beautiful. But then if you jump to chapters 3 to 11, human sin and the ruin of God's world. That's what chapters 3 through 11 are talking about. Human sin and the ruin of God's world. Suspicion of God's goodness. Quest for wisdom apart from Creator. Human arrogance and declaration of independence from God. Naive trust in technological progress. Now, you might look at the words on the screen, the words you're writing down on your bulletin, you go, oh boy, isn't this true of our world right now? Oh, suspicion of God's goodness, quest for wisdom apart from Creator, human arrogance and declaration of independence from God, naive trust in technological progress. Here's where we got to be careful. It is very easy to see those words and go, oh, that is so true of other people. That is so true of the world around us. And guess what? It is true of other people, and it is true of the world around us. That's a great description of the state of our world. But be careful, because those words describe you, and those words describe me. Chapters 3 to 11 are not somebody else's story. They're our story. Suspicion of God's goodness. Oswald Chambers said that the root of all sin is suspicion that God is not good. The root of all sin is suspicion that God is not good. How often do we conclude, wait a second, is God really as good as he makes himself out to be? Will he continue to love and be filled with grace and forgiveness? Are his ways really the best way? We get suspicious. We come up with other ways. We doubt his everlasting goodness. I was at a conference years ago, and the speaker was speaking, and he paused in the midst of his presentation, and he said, I want you to imagine that Jesus is standing in front of you right now. And Jesus is looking at you right in the eye. And as Jesus looks at you, he knows everything about you. He knows what you've done. He knows what you think. He knows your fears. He knows everything about you. And then the speaker says, I want you to imagine the look on Jesus' face as he looks at you. And as I consider Jesus knowing everything about me, what the look on his face would be, this was what I imagined Jesus looked like. How much longer am I going to have to put up with you, Mike? Your inconsistent discipleship, your fickle faith, your broken promises. You know, Mike, I'm about this close to giving up on you. That was the image I had of God as he considered me. But then the speaker went on to say, if the look on the face of Jesus in your imagination is anything less than love and grace, you do not fully understand the Jesus you claim to worship. We are so suspicious that his love for us is somehow dependent upon our performance, and it's not going to last. It's not going to stand the test of time. We become suspicious, and we choose other avenues. Quest for wisdom apart from Creator, that becomes very evident in how often we take the teachings of Jesus and somehow excuse ourselves from actually following them because the teachings of Jesus, we conclude, are, well, they're just not practical. And somehow practical is more important to us than obedience and sacrifice. Human arrogance and declaration of independence from God. How often do we make ourselves the lead actor in the story of life? We're the central character. Naive trust and technological progress. How often do we allow ourselves to be defined by our accomplishments and our acquisitions? And we put our hope in those things and not the power and love of Jesus Christ. One of the mistakes we make when we read the book of Genesis is to conclude that it's somebody else's story. It's our story. Chapters 3 to 11 are telling our story, but here's the good news. The story doesn't end there. The good news is the book of Genesis continues all the way out to chapter 50, and the Bible doesn't end at chapter 11 of Genesis. It continues. So let's go ahead and take a look at part 2 of Genesis.
We're walking through the book of Genesis, which is made up of these two main parts.
And the first part begins in the garden, where we watch humanity spiral downward in self-destruction. And it ends in the Tower of Babel, where a rebellious humanity is scattered by God.
Then the second part of Genesis zooms in and focuses on just one family.
And right in the middle is this story that links the two parts of Genesis together and helps us understand what the whole book is all about.
So how do we get from the Tower of Babel to the story here in the middle?
Well, after the scattering at Babel, there's this genealogy, and it follows one of the tribes all the way down to this one guy named Abram.
You probably know him as Abraham.
And God starts making all these promises to Abraham, like he's going to bless him and give him a ton of kids. And he says that through him and his family, all the nations of the earth are now going to find God's blessing. So basically, God is trying to restore humanity back to the goodness of the garden and to his original intentions for the world. So it's like his rescue plan for humanity. And that's why the whole second half of Genesis is about this one family. And so you have Abraham, and then he has a son, Isaac, who has Jacob, and then Jacob has 12 sons. And each generation, God renews his promise to bless them and all nations through them.
So because of this promise to use this family to rescue the world, it's pretty easy to read these stories as examples of how to be a good person.
But actually, for the most part, this family is totally dysfunctional. So for example, let's go back to Abraham. This whole story is about God giving him and his wife Sarah a family. But two different times, he basically gives Sarah away to other men by denying that she's even his wife. And then Sarah gets impatient about having a son, and so she makes Abraham sleep with her servant girl, which then causes all of these other problems in the family.
So they get really old, and you begin to think that there's no way they're going to have a kid of their own. But then, miraculously, they do. It's Isaac.
And Isaac, he has two sons, Esau and Jacob, and it seems like things are going pretty good.
But Jacob, the younger brother, wants the family's inheritance, which belongs to Esau, the older brother. So he devises a plan where he's going to steal it from his father, Isaac, who at this point in the story is now old and blind.
Which, who does that? Horrible, stealing from your blind father.
Yeah, and then he just takes off.
So Jacob goes on from there to have 12 sons, big family. But Jacob loves his 11th son, Joseph, way more than all the others. And so he gives him the special Technicolor dream coat. And his brothers, because of this, come to hate him.
So much so that they plan on killing him.
But they don't. They instead just sell him as a slave down in Egypt.
Now, while in Egypt, through this crazy series of events, Joseph goes from being in a prison cell to becoming the second in command there.
And so later on, the whole Middle East falls into this food shortage. And Joseph's brothers, they come down to Egypt looking for food. And then when they get there, who should they find as the ruler of the whole land?
It's Joseph, that guy they sold into slavery. But he actually saves them from starving to death.
And so here you have it. These are the great-grandchildren of Abraham who have done this heinous act to their brother. But God has transformed their evil into something good.
And that's exactly what Joseph says here in the last paragraph of the entire book. He says, "You guys planned all of this for evil, but God planned it for good, to save people's lives."
Now, these words, they conclude the book because they actually summarize the message of the whole story so far. Humans keep choosing evil, and we are thinking they're screwing up God's plan, but he keeps turning their evil back into good. And somehow, he's going to use this family to restore humanity back to the garden.
So that's the book of Genesis. But we still don't know how exactly he's going to use this family to bring us back to the garden.
Well, yeah, but this is just the first book. So that's what the rest of the Bible sets out to answer.
All right. One last fill in the blank for us. God initiates his plan to rescue humanity through his covenant with the family of Abraham. God's restoration program is through a promise through one family. And this is going to be where we take the rest of the sermon series. So picking up next week, we're going to be with Abraham. And we're going to look at how God is using this family to restore that which was broken. So what do we do with the book of Genesis? When it comes to the first part of Genesis, we need to own that it's our story. We need to own that that's our story. That we have contributed to the brokenness and darkness and chaos in our world. We need to own that. But we also get to own that we're part of chapters 12 through 50. That as God has chosen Abraham and his descendants, so God has chosen us to be part of what he's doing to restore that which is broken. When it comes to the book of Genesis, you need to own both parts. I've contributed to it, and yet God has not given up on me. He has called me and continued to love me and has invited me to be part of what he is doing. I'd encourage you over the course of this month, read the book of Genesis. I guarantee you're going to come across some parts go, that was not on the flannel graph when I was a kid. Because there's some stuff in Genesis that is just straight wrong. But as you read it, remember these themes. Wait a second. God created a beautiful world. That world became broken because of human sin. But God does not give up on a broken world. And he sets forth to restore it. And may all of us own both parts of that story as we move forward. Hope you guys are all back next week to see how Abraham starts into this process. But for now, would you join me in prayer? Lord, you are good and your mercy endures forever, and that is so very evident in the first book of the Bible. Your goodness is made known in creation. Your goodness is made known by the fact that you continue to involve your people in restoring that which is broken, and you do not give up. Your faithfulness, your endurance, your patience, your love, your grace. Father, as we spend time in your word this next month, as individuals and as a group, Father, overwhelm us with the fact that we are part of a much larger story. Give us the humility to confess our part in the brokenness, but then overwhelm us with your forgiveness, overwhelm us with your grace, overwhelm us with your faithfulness as we live into the calling to be part of the process of restoration. Lord, you are good. Your mercy endures forever. And for that, we say thanks. And we pray this all in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.